two quite difficult readings there, many ways. Last week, we thought about how we are more privileged, as Christians especially, more privileged than the richest men in the world. And I named some of them, right through from Elon Musk, the owner of Tesla, and who could do so much with the extraordinary amount of money that he got, right through to our King, King Charles at the moment, who seems to have a very privileged life, but recognizes that comes with some difficulties as well. And we've seen those difficulties in the news just recently. We thought about some words. We thought about the word predestination. We thought about the words being chosen. And that given us a link with Jesus as the chosen one. When God sent his only son. By calling that word meaning in the Greek to be in a new situation or station in life. Or how that calling is irrevocable because it is given by God without regrets. It's given by God without regrets. And that includes being part of Christ's body. We accept him into our lives. Steve has preached some recent sermons. We'll come back through some of them. He's preached on worry amidst God's blessings. But even when we see God's blessings, we can worry about certain other parts of our lives that perhaps at that time doesn't seem to be quite so much of a blessing. Assurance of freedom from guilt. He's preached on unrestricted access to God. And he also spoke on election. But that was more to do with the elections that we were having just recently, also in part our election. And then the things we do not see being more important than what we do see. And that's about having spiritual eyes, he says, wearing your glasses. So what's going on? What should I say last week about living a privileged life, our calling, our chosen state, our freedom, and our safety in that calling? And then talk about James saying we have to do good works. Let's try and tackle that one, shall we? If you read James through, it's only in that one part that he talks as such. Faith and works or deeds, verse 24. You see, a person is considered righteous by what they do and not by faith alone. Surely this goes against what Paul used to teach, and which still teaches actually through other words that we read in the Bible. Salvation by faith alone. Are they at odds with one another? James is not talking about salvation as such. It's more about living out our salvation in appropriate ways. In fact, he handles this one, Paul handles this one in Philippians 2, verse 12. Paul himself says, therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but how much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. Evocative words, aren't they? Fear and trembling. To work out, to produce, to accomplish or to bring about and to be committed. Fear. The word is phobos or phobia, which phobio. That's the root of phobia. And that's not of the flying or of needles or of spiders or like I am sometimes, the size of a big ship standing next to me sends me into a kind of phobia. It's a phobia that I've got. I can't help it. It's one of those things. Weird. I know. I'm weird. Yeah, I know. And trembling. Actually, trembling just means trembling. As before God himself, but with confidence, born of a relationship with Jesus, our intercessor. Those things that Steve's talked about over the last few weeks. So what's James talking about? What's his thrust in this? My Bible and yours perhaps as well, especially in the NIV. I've got a specific version of that. I see there's many different versions of Bibles. My Bible splits up books and chapters into nice, neat little headings. And that's helped me out greatly in this. And James tackles such things as this. One of the headings right at the top of one of the chapters is trials and temptations. We all face them. Rarely can they be avoided. God may set us trials as he did with Abraham and Isaac. Remember when Abraham was called to sacrifice Isaac? He didn't have to carry through that chance at the end. God gave him a way out. He didn't have to sacrifice his son. James talks about being tempted. And James himself answers that, just as Paul answered about works. James answers this himself. In 1 verse 13, it says, when tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. That wouldn't be in God's nature to do that. He also deals with favoritism being forbidden. In our own society, I gave some thought to this, and we might call it prejudice, might be nowadays. Avoid prejudice. We've seen something come up recently, Black Lives Matter. That's fallen back a little bit, although that comes up now and again. The Me Too campaign about women being sexually abused and the way women are treated in many circumstances, even if it's not sexual, whether it's in their professions or workplaces. We can all fall foul of favoritism and prejudice. This is something that James speaks against. Taming the tongue. Do you remember when we used to have the monthly news sheets come through from Steve, so well produced by him and by Amy's daughter? It says one of the lines that I had on top of it every month said, Philippians 4:8, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. If your mind is centered on those things, then perhaps the tongue will be also. If your mind is so wrapped up in all those good things, perhaps your tongue will be under a little bit more of control. He speaks about submission. That's to God. Submission to anybody can be one of the hardest things for us to submit to. Submission can be one of the hardest things for any of us to submit to. And that's including God. Especially if we don't think he's doing what should be for us. He speaks about deeds. That's a Greek word that can mean work, activity, a task given, practices that you might have. It also talks about requirements and actions. I believe that James is saying that this is actually an exhortation to have a righteous, changed mindset and heart, where the deeds are driven from these things. And that lists are not exhaustive. What does it benefit you if you're doing good deeds and they're only about making you feel good about yourself? And trust me, there's always someone willing to bring you down to earth on that. About yourself. Satan is a past master at it. And that came into what Steve was saying over those last few weeks. God says one thing of you, Satan wants to say another thing. He's trapping. He loves to whisper in your ear. Again, what does it benefit you if you attend every prayer meeting and service? And I'm not locking that door. Please don't stop coming. That really encourages us all. But then you go and slag off your neighbour for an overgrown tree that's taking the light from your garden. We've actually suffered from that just recently. But be careful what we say. Perhaps a noisy party. Perhaps you might ignore a homeless person in the street. So James speaks to me of attitude, the attitude of the good Samaritan, rather than I want to feel good about myself. The attitude of the good Samaritan, rather than I want to feel good about myself. The works of deeds are the outworking of that premise of having a new mindset. I suggest that what James says relates directly to the parable that Jackie also read from Luke. Jesus tells the crowd this parable. Might be worth looking how the lead up to that parable comes about, because I think it starts actually more correctly in chapter 10. A long way back, isn't it, leading up to such a short reading? But Jesus has been to Bethany, he's visited Mary and Martha. He's seen where Mary's head is. She's at that occasion where Mary gets a bit annoyed with the sister because she seems to be leaving it. She's sitting at Jesus' feet, listening to what is good. Jesus tells them that's what is good. But she's more worried about what's going to feed them. You know, I've got to look good in this. I want to look good. Then it goes on to chapter 11. He was a man who was mute. But some of the gathered crowd, including the Pharisees, mistake his power and motives as less than godly. So that's the power of Satan. Got the wrong mindset. Don't see who Jesus is. Jesus is invited to the home of a Pharisee. I believe Jesus we're moving towards in this thing, towards Jerusalem. Jesus is invited to a home of a Pharisee where he continues to challenge, and you might even say demolish, because there wasn't that one Pharisee, there was other Pharisees were there as well. There's probably a bit of a houseful, if anything. He continues to challenge or even demolish their self-righteous attitudes. Put yourself in that place. If you're invited, as some have been, to an audience with a pope, or an audience with a king, because you're going to get a big gong put on your chest, or he's going to lay a sword on your shoulders and knight you or something. But then you went around and asked them some difficult question, like, who do you think you are? So what did happen between you and Harry? Can you imagine the reaction? I'm sure you'd be picked up by your arms and hustled out of the room pretty quickly. And that'd be pretty embarrassing for you. It's a mindset, isn't it? Different way of approaching people. We move on to verse 12. Chapter 12, verse 1. Crowds are still gathering, so many that they are trampling on one another. You read that. They're trampling over each other to get closer to Jesus, to hear what he's saying. Health and safety out of the window. But Jesus doesn't contact the health and safety executive. He's looking at his phone. Can you come down? Can you sort this out? Look, it's getting really dangerous here. I can hardly move myself. People are getting trampled on. It's going to be pretty bad. He doesn't do that, does he? What he does, he continues with his mission. There's something in there for us. We can be diverted from our mission. And just as in James, that chapter 12 also goes through things like warnings and encouragements. Jesus talks about the rich man, the rich fool rather, not the rich young man who came to him, different, the rich fool, another parable. He talks about not worrying, we've thought about that before, everything is in God's control. Being watchful of the times, doesn't mean you respond to your mantelpiece of peace, your clock on there. It's about heavenly things going on which affect this world And you, we prayed about this morning already, especially about Israel and about Ukraine. But what I mean to it's on a worldwide level. He's not bringing peace, but division. That's not what they want to hear. That's not what we want to hear, is it? We're peace, not being division, not peace. It's a scary thing, isn't it? We expect Jesus to be peaceful, but it's a natural thing for that to happen to us, and especially in our families when they'll be split and divided. Not just watching those times, but interpreting them. Again, back to our prayers earlier. Chapter 13 continues with a heading, repent or perish. Hard words, as in those at the end of the other parable that Jackie read. And so we get to that second reading. But the context of the last few chapters, I believe, critical to understanding that read, the parable of the unfruitful fig tree. Figs for Israel were a symbol of fruitfulness, of blessings to Israel. And Jesus was talking to Jews. And possibly, I'd like to think, just outside Jerusalem. What would be a better, more fitting backdrop? The center of worship and all that they are as a nation. And Jesus tells this parable. It must have hit them fair and square between the eyes. Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you, really? Israel was supposed to be a light unto the Gentiles, but was failing dismally. The temple should have been a house of prayer, but become a den of thieves, what Jesus called them when he threw over the market stalls. Jesus was showing the nakedness of Israel as a nation and as a religious entity. Isaiah 49 says, is it too small, or sorry, it is too small, I think, for you to be my servant, to restore the tribes of Jacob and bring back those of Israel I've kept. I will also make you a light for the Gentiles, that my salvation may reach to the ends of the earth. Israel, Jesus, it'll be Jesus who will be the fulfillment as a Jew of that prophecy. And the Jews should have recognized their own nakedness. Theirs was the scriptures, including the story of Adam and Eve and the fig leaves. And the fig leaves, a sign of their embarrassing nakedness, something they hadn't been before in front of God, but now they recognized it. And Jesus is laying it bare before them. I wonder how many minds went back to that. 2 Timothy 3, verse 5 says this, having a form of godliness, religion, but denying its power. He was writing to Timothy about the church that he'd left Timothy in charge of and saying that there's going to be problems there. He left Timothy to try and sort them out. And Timothy might have struggled. He was a young man who may very well have been brought down by that. That prejudice we were talking about earlier, coming back again. Because he was too young, as was thought. Having a form of godliness, but denying its power. They were full of doing all the right things. Going to church, synagogue, every Sabbath. Trying to do all the right things, getting all the right things sorted out in their lives. But it wasn't, it was denying the power of the gospel, the power to save and to bring about a true righteousness, the righteousness that only Jesus could achieve for us. Not the written law or the stone tablets or parchment bowls, although Paul knew the benefit of both. The Apostle Paul knew the benefit of both. If it were not for the law, he would not have known how far away he was from God. And he was one that was fulfilling all those laws. He was absolutely perfect in it all. But he realized in writing to Timothy that even he had a form of godliness but denied it, denying its power to save. It was the writing on Paul's heart, right on Paul's heart, that saved him, that what was written on paper. But what does this parable say to us now, today? Last week we thought about a life of privilege, yeah, having been chosen, predestined, and called. But we'll also be called to be conformed to the likeness of Jesus. And I looked at the word conform. The dictionary says, refers to the act of aligning one's actions or beliefs with group norms or societal standards, often to achieve harmony or acceptance. As far as Jesus is concerned, utter rubbish. We'll be conformed to what he is, not what society is about, not to make ourselves acceptable to that society, or to even live in harmony with it. But to be conformed to what Jesus is. It's better to be like Jesus than to be like the world. And in contrast, in other words, very similar, transform suggests a profound or radical change in form. This is what the dictionary says. Appearance or structure, typically resulting in a significant shift or improvement. Being conformed is not about appearance. Appearances can be and often are deceptive. This point, I just want to show you, because it comes back to this parable that Jackie read to us. I just want to show you a couple of pictures, a couple of images. This, hopefully you can see this. This is a tree or a bush called a clistemon. You might know it better as a bottle brush. We have one of these in our gardens, in our garden at the back there. It was my favourite plant out of all of the plants that are in the garden. It has such a beauty to it. See the bright scarlet flower heads on it and the little almost golden points on the end of it. Absolutely beautiful plant. We have one. We put it, must have been in the right place. I cared for it. I tried to protect it with a trellis work on one side of it to protect it from the winds that came across our garden, knowing it might damage it. Unfortunately, one year we had a prolonged amount of frost and that got to it. I even tried to wrap around the roots on it, but it still got to it. It died. And I was heartbroken. I love that plant. It was a huge red plant. And it was like the glory of the garden through the time that it was blooming. Moving on a few years, Jackie knew that I still would love one of those plants. And she brought me one for a birthday present. And I was just so made up. We couldn't put it back in the place where the old one was because we'd already replanted around there. And most of those plants, well, all of those plants, are thriving wonderfully. So we put it somewhere else in the garden, a little bit closer to the house. It's been there 10 years. And for 9 of them, it's not really bloomed at all. There's been little bits, you know, you see the little kind of almost bits where the flowers are coming out of there. I had lots of them on it, but they never amounted to anything. To the point where we said, what Jesus said, that the fig tree is taking up space. We need to get up. I didn't want to. I loved that plant. I knew it just had a chance. There was a little sign of life in it. And even Jackie turned and said, oh, I'm sorry I even brought it for you. It's been such a disappointment. But this year, it started to grow. I did take some photographs of, but unfortunately, it didn't come out particularly brilliantly. So I've taken these off the internet. But the original one was just as beautiful as what you see in front of you. But this one is just starting to come out like that. There's a promise of it. It did look more beautiful this year than it's ever done before. So we've left it. We've not done that much to it now to make sure it's watered. But next year, I think it's going to be more like the image that you see in front of you here. And I'll be so pleased with it again. I'll show you another couple of images. This is what Jesus was talking about. The bottom right-hand corner image to you is the fig trees. If it wasn't for the fruit, which you see at the top of the uppermost picture, it wouldn't look too much. They're gnarly old things, and you think, what good are they? They had all that meaning for Israel. Jesus walked amongst them. But one of those that God himself, who designed the tree, said, dig it up, it's taking up space that something else more productive can be in. But Jesus, the divine gardener, said, no. Look, I know you've been coming here these 3 years. Just give me another year. I'll put some fertilizer around it. I'll look after it. I'll care for it. If it doesn't produce anything next year when you come back again, then yeah, okay, we'll dig it up. We'll get rid of it. We'll put something that's a bit more productive. I wonder what Jesus tried to say to us in that. Yesterday, my daughter Charlene went on a trip to a friend's to support her, to help her. She was along with other people as well that were also there to support and to help her. And whether we like it or not, this was a competition for bodybuilding. And this friend of hers was in the ladies section of that. As it turned out, she won her best in class and she won the overall title. But she had to go through a lot to try and achieve that goal that she wanted. She had to eat the right things. She had to look after her body. She couldn't drink things that might have an adverse effect on it. But she won what she was after. She reached her goal. And she wondered what that says to us. And I thought about it this morning. It only happened yesterday. So I just added this bit in for this morning. She wondered what it says to us, that what we put into our bodies, what we allow in through our eyes, what we read that isn't good for us. Paul says everything for us is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. We can do what we want within reason. But even when we do those things we want to do, they may be okay for us to do, they're not always beneficial for us to do. He also talks about, doesn't he, an athlete trains himself. We go back to those words that Jesus said in the Lord said in our call there. Better at being training, better at being equipping as part of Christ's body. And that's what we are, as part of Christ's body. So I think there, I'm going to leave that to you. Just to think those things through. Think about the bottle brush and my attitude towards it. I wanted to save it, and it's actually come right in the end. Wait, I'd wait 10 years for it. We'll see. Also about what Jesus said, that parable, that's a fig tree. Where might you be in that? Some of us think there are certain things that we need to do. It may be that it's first making sure we speak to enough people about Jesus. God doesn't hold tallies like that. Goes deeper than that, but it's the right thing to do. It's actually an imperative in the Bible to speak to people of God's love for them. And I don't believe what Jesus requires from us is even those gifts of the Spirit. It's good if they're displayed. And when Jesus displayed them, It's because of the power of God working through him, bringing glory to God. That's great. But let's not actually hold that. How many gifts we have, or how many gifts we've displayed, how many healings we think we've made. All of that. I would suggest to you, as Jesus said about the fig tree, it's the fruit he's looking for. A fruit of Galatians. Love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. How many of these do we see in Jesus? Naturally, all of them. And we are to conform to his likeness. The fruit that we see in Jesus is his very nature. See, Satan can counterfeit the gifts. We know that because the Bible tells us he can. But the fruit he cannot, because it goes against his very nature. But the fruit is Jesus' nature. The miracles are God's power displayed through him. The fruit is who he is. I find it interesting that this parable comes just after those verses we looked at earlier. It's followed straight away by Jesus healing a woman who had been bent over double of sin, a lady like that, and it's horrendous to go through. Been bent over double for 18 years. And this lady, in Jesus' time, didn't have the help the lady I know did. Although sometimes she refused it. 18 years because of an evil spirit. Immediately, a Pharisee railed against Jesus because he had healed her on the Sabbath. And he told the crowd not to come to healing on the Sabbath, because there are 7 other days they could come to for healing, including to him. Wasn't he righteous before God? But he was actually making them as much of a slave to his own belief system and religion as he is. The law and rules that God never intended to bring salvation, because they couldn't. And in Corinthians 12 and 14, we read about those gifts of the Spirit so much. What's in the middle of it? Naturally, chapter 13. What's it about? It's about love. So often used for weddings. We saw a wedding when we were out with the grandchildren yesterday on the beach, actually down at Dovercourt. Great, marvellous. I wonder if they had this reading in Corinthians 12, 13, about love. It's misused in that because it's in the midst of the gifts, which is totally used in love. And it's a love that the fruit of the Spirit leads us into a deeper sense of it. Our fruitfulness comes from being more like Jesus in his nature. That's not easy. The divine gardener is there tending you and giving you time. Don't waste that time on unnecessary things or worries. Because the alternative might be an uprooting. None of us want that. So if you wake up one morning with your feet in a grow bag, don't worry about it, because that's Jesus helping you to grow and helping you to be fruitful. Just accept it and release yourself to him. Amen.